Today's presenter is Paul Butler. Paul has been a member of the Westfield Level 2 Support Organization since March 2003. He has worked on multiple teams within the Level 2 Support Organization and currently is the team lead of the CET team. The CET team focuses on web services, J2C, JTS, ORB naming, WLM, and HA manager. Paul reported in Westfield. Before joining Webster Support, Paul worked on the AIX Level 2 Support Group. They supported NFS, NIS, DNS, and other networking applications within AIX. Paul studied computer science at West Texas A&M University and Texas Tech University. At this time, I'd like to turn the presentation over to Paul.
All right. Thank you, Elijah, for the introduction. Moving on to slide 2, I have the agenda for today's presentation. I'd like to start off with a brief overview of workload management and then move on to the various types of clients that we have within WebShare that use workload management. We'll then talk about workload management routing and weighted routing, and then common workload management problems that are reported to support. Then we'll move into the problem determination side of the presentation, which includes diagnosing routing problems, routing pattern issues, and how to identify them. Workload management runtime exceptions and their meanings and what you can do to work with those, and then other factors that affect workload management in general. Okay, slide 3. All right, on slide 3, we'll start off by discussing the two types of workload management that are included with WebShare application server. The first type of workload management is used to route HTTP requests between clients to clustered web applications. This type of workload management is handled by the WebSphere HTTP plugin, which contains logic and configuration to route these requests. The type of workload management that we're going to focus on in today's presentation, though, is the EJB workload management. This is the workload management that is used to route RMI over IOP requests from an EJB client to a clustered EJB. So in talking about what type of request get balanced, I've included a list at the bottom of the slide of the various types of EJB requests. And these are all things that you would do when calling an EJB. But when calling a clustered EJB, things like the JNDI lookup for the EJB home interface, EJB creates that are done as part of the J2EE spec, and the EJB business methods, the actual application logic that provide the function for the EJB, along with the EJB removes. Now, in WebShare, the EJB remove is actually a no-op operation because we use EJB caching, so it is an optional call. A lot of applications are coded to do this, and therefore we support it by J2EE spec. Other things that we'd like to mention here is that EJB workload management does not just rotate around the EJB method calls, which is a common misunderstanding and can lead to the pattern issues that we'll talk about later on in the presentation. Okay, slide 4. So on slide 4, I have listed the types of clients that are supported within WebShare to utilize workload management. At the top, we have a diagram. The types of clients supported in WebShare App Server, the first one would be an actual application running within an application server making a call to a clustered application, EJB application. This could be a JSP, a servlet, or an EJB, or even a web service. The key here is that it's running within an app server, and it's making a call to a cluster of app servers hosting that EJB. And that's seen in the diagram on the left above. The second type of client that's not shown on the chart but is definitely used by clients is a app client or a WebShare app client that would be calling a clustered EJB. This type of client uses the launch client command to launch a client ear file that then sets up a container for that client to make the calls out. In both the app server case and the managed client case, the containers themselves have all of the workload management jars needed to handle workload management from a client side, so there's no configuration there that you would need to do. Your application would be a normal EJB client application invoking a clustered EJB, And so there really are no special considerations that you would need for those types. The third type of client shown on the right side of the diagram is a standalone Java client. And this is where we get the most of our questions and problems related to client-side issues. For Java standalone clients to be able to utilize workload management within WebSphere App Server, you need to be using a couple of things. First, you need an IBM ORB that's included with the IBM JRE and JDK, and even the Sun repackaged JDK that we provide with our Solaris app clients. But if you're running with just a Sun pure Sun SDK, then you don't have the IBM ORB. So there's options using pluggable application clients that are provided as part of WebSphere App Server that will provide you with the IBM ORB and all of the supporting workload management jars. That's the second part that usually will trip up somebody using a standalone client, is that the workload management jars also need to be within the class path. And the easiest way to do this is to have the app client installed onto your client system, wherever your standalone client's going to run, and to just use the JRE and also the class path of that app client installation so that you have all of the WebSphere jars available to your client. If you we don't support copying jar by jar over to a particular client system, so this is really the best and supported method that you would want to use. Okay, slide 5, please. All right, on slide 5, we're going to talk about workload management routing, which is based on weights. I've included a link here on the slide that has a great bit of information about how the algorithm works and how weighted routing works. But the key here is when you create a cluster and all the cluster members, you assign a weight to each one of those cluster members. I believe the default out of the box is 2, is the number 2 for each cluster member. And if all of those weights are equal, then you'll have a round-robin sort of routing for your cluster. So as the client makes a request, each one of these types of requests that we talked about on slide 3, then they would go to a different cluster member, and these weights would be decremented as these cluster members handle these requests. The reason we have a number to assign and don't just round-robin it is you may have hardware that's much better for one of your cluster members, or one of your nodes may be running on a really good system with more memory, more CPU, so you may want to put more load to that particular server. So you can modify your weights. You may want to give it double the amount of weight as one of your other nodes. So in those cases, you would see a distribution that would not be round robin or equal. And it even goes to say that if you are using the round robin and everything's equal, if you were to look at a trace of that, you might not always see them in order, but over a period of time, the request would be equal. The way the algorithm works, which is discussed in that link, explains more about how over a period of time, the request will be equal, but not necessarily in a snapshot. Another setting that is part of the cluster setting that affects workload management routing is the preferred local setting. And what this does is if the client is running on the same physical server as the node that contains the cluster member that's being routed, all requests from that client, if preferred local is enabled, will go to that cluster member. We'll see this reported a lot of times to support as someone not getting requests sent to other nodes. They'll only be receiving requests to one of their nodes, and then we'll, as we dig into it and come to find out, the client will be running on the same node as one of the cluster members and preferred local is checked. Okay. Slide 6. So the type of commonly reported WLM problems to support really kind of fall under two categories. The first type is EJB request not being load balanced between cluster members. This could include uneven routing, so one of my cluster members is getting a lot more requests than another, and that can lead to other issues like high CPU, out of memory, things like that, because they believe that, you know, they size their system to handle a even number of requests, and if more are going to one server, then you can have lots of other types of problems. And then the other type of the routing issues have to do with no request going to a particular server at all. Then we have the WLM runtime errors, and we're going to talk about these later on in this slide, but these are the CORBA no implement errors. And just because they have CORBA in the name, it's not actually an ORB error, it's a workload management error, and these have a minor exception related to it about either no available target, no cluster data available, forward limit reached, retry limit reached, and again, we'll go over these in a later slide during the troubleshooting section. Okay, moving on to slide 7. Once you begin to know that you have a workload management problem, and now you're going to try to start diagnosing it, because workload management involves many different cluster members, you can have node agents that are involved in the process, you can have clients involved in the process. If you were just to kind of brute force attack the problem by turning on tracing everywhere, you could spend a lot of time gathering traces for things you don't need. So what I always like to do is start off with just a trace on one of the clients that's experiencing the issue or sending these requests that are not being balanced. And so the thought here is we want to see what kind of workload management data the client believes is that we have, and then also what the actual requests going out are, so we can actually build a snapshot of what's going on using this trace string that I've outlined in step one. This is a ORB WLM tracing, and typically for those of you familiar with ORB tracing, there's two parts of ORB tracing, the ORB RAS trace string that you see there, and along with we have WLM as well. And there's also COM tracing, which is a checkbox that you have to enable within WebSphere to add additional tracing. And that requires a restart, so for diagnosing just a simple routing problem, we actually don't need the COM tracing for that. We can start with just this ORB RAS and WLM trace. And what this will do is this will produce you can actually enable this at runtime so you don't even have to stop your server and then, you know, recreate your problem. And we'll get a trace.log. And from that trace.log, we're going to want to use a good search utility like grep, or if you have a text editor that's capable of returning multiple lines. And we want to pull out all of the lines that are the three-parameter get connection call. I've got this listed here at the bottom of the slide, and we'll go over this in detail. If you look into the text at the bottom, you'll see that the WS transport class has a get connection method, and it takes in three parameters: profile, client delegate, and operation name. When this output line goes to the trace, it prints out the host and port where the ORB request is being sent, and as well as the IOR, which is the encoded address that includes the host, port, and operation. And then finally at the bottom in blue, the operation name. The host and port are the actual ORB listener address or the CSIV2 address if security is enabled of where the request is being sent. And then the operation name is the actual method that's being called. So in this case, this is a method called which server. This is something I had in my test DJB that I was using, one of my business methods. Other things that you can see in the operation field would be resolve complete info, which is the method that's called when we're doing a JNDI lookup, which, as you recall, was one of the workload managed methods. The other things that you might see here are get properties, which is the initial context call, or you can see create or remove. So what we'd like to see is we want to use this trace to try to get a picture of the routing. And if we move on to slide 8, you can actually see, I've taken out the IOR to make it a little easier to read, but if you're looking at this from a grep, you can actually see the request going back and forth between the server running on port 1329 and the server listening and running on port 1327. I'm doing the same operation. So if I'm looking at this, I can see that my workload is being balanced between the two servers. As I make each call in my test client, for that particular method, it's going back and forth between the servers. So this is an example of good or proper routing and what we'd like to see. In a case where you're not seeing proper routing, or let's say you had the preferred local case, I would see all of the requests going to the same host and port. And for my test case there, I'm using the same, I've got Bullis 1 and Bullis 2, so I would see all the requests going to either Bullis 1 or Bullis 2 on that particular port. All right, moving on to slide 9. So those the last trace point we looked at was from the ORBRAS part of the trace, and that's useful, like I said, for getting that host and port. But workload management tracing also has a nice output that we can look at that will give us the actual server name. This becomes useful if you don't know which servers are using dynamic ports and you don't know which servers are listening on what ports. That can get quite confusing in a large cell environment. So if we look down to the top server for invocation trace output there at the bottom, you see what happens is whenever the workload management plugin makes a decision on where it's going to route a request, it will print out at the very end in this top server for invocation exit, it'll print out the server that it chose to route the request to. And in this case, we can actually see the cell name, the member name, so cluster member 1, and the node name. This is useful if you just want to see the cell name, the actual cluster member names, you're not concerned with the host and port. If you were to do a grep again, you'd want to pull out all of these lines, and then you'd be able to see a quick snapshot of all the workload managed requests, as opposed to the previous slide where we would see all the ORB requests. Not all the ORB requests necessarily are going to be workload managed, only the ones that fit under the types of requests that we outlined on slide 3. Another WLM trace keyword that the development team suggested I include in this presentation is to look for the keyword unexpected. Whenever they run into a problem in the workload management code, they'll use this keyword along with some other exception or some other problem. So if you're just trying to diagnose a workload management problem, searching on the keyword unexpected, if there is an issue, will quickly get you to maybe in a very large trace what you want to focus on. On slide 10, we have the third workload management output, and this is set observed weight. What this is used to do is it shows the actual observed weight of the server from the client's perspective. So if you recall what I was saying about workload management and routing earlier, it's based on these weights for each one of the servers. And when the client gets the clustered data and information about who all is in the cluster, what their weights are, it iterates over this information, and as requests are made, the weights are decremented, and what this output shows you is what the actual weight of the cluster member is at that time. So you can actually build a picture of how the weights are going up and down for a particular cluster member. A case a more practical example would be I've had clients who use a weight of 0, so they'll actually go and set the runtime weight of 0 of a particular cluster member to effectively take it out of rotation. The server's still up and running, the cluster member's up and running, but by having the weight of 0, it should not be receiving any requests. So then maintenance can be done, it can be brought down and brought back up and put back in after by changing the runtime weight back to 2 or whatever you're using for that. But in some cases, I've had problems reported where setting that runtime weight didn't take effect. So this is where we would use the workload management trace to actually see what the client is picking up concerning the observed weight of that particular cluster member to understand why it may still be trying to send requests to that cluster member even though we've told it that the weight is a 0. Okay, moving on to slide 11. We'll talk about the next step. So if you've identified an issue, maybe we have all requests going to one cluster member or the routing's uneven, something like that. What you'll want to first check is the weight for each server. This, the most simple thing is to drill down into the admin console under servers, clusters, the cluster name, and then to the cluster members page, you'll see all of your cluster members listed there and their weights. There's also a runtime tab where you can actually go and live change the weight of the particular cluster member. That's more for the uneven routing case, and we want to see if there's, if those are all equal. The next thing you want to do is look for a static routing table. And this is more of a tricky problem. Generally, these are reported as no request going to a particular node or a particular cluster member. And what happens is a static routing table was a feature that was added for customers who wanted to be able to disable the HA manager but still use workload management routing. So what would happen is there's a button within the console that allows you to generate a static routing table, and it basically takes a snapshot of the current weights of all the servers and the workload management data. It writes it to this file that I have listed here that it's cluster name .wsrttbl under the config directory. So you would go down to your deployment manager, look into your cluster root or cluster directory, and see if you have one of these files. And then with that file, the node agent would load up and use the information to provide to clients when clients made requests to these particular clusters. If you have one of these, or one of these were created when one of your cluster members was down, that was permanently recorded in the static table. So what would happen is the static routing table would have a zero weight for some server, and then since that's being used over and over, the clients would never route requests to that. And we actually ran into there was a defect earlier in version 6 where this static routing table was created when you made any modifications to the HA manager settings page. This was very early on in version 6, but it took a while for us to find all of the problems related to this and have people actually find out that they were using a static routing table even though they didn't realize they were. The third thing to do is check the preferred local setting. There are many times that we go along looking at diagnosing one of the cluster routing issues where all requests are going to a particular node, and we dig into it and find out it was something as simple as the preferred local checkbox being set. So it's one of the first things I like to verify anytime you have requests that are not going to a particular cluster member. Easy thing to check through the console. Okay, slide 12. All right, this is another very commonly reported problem that has to do with patterned routing. And what I mean by this, if you look at the code at the top of the slide, you'll see a typical EJB invocation. This is very simple. We start off with an initial context, and then we do a lookup for the EJB home, followed by a home.create so that we can get a bean instance. Once we have that bean instance, then we can actually call the method, the business method that we're trying to invoke, and then the optional bean remove. So this would be a typical client. This could be a servlet, a JSP, anything. And if we count the number of workload manageable requests there, you'll see that there's 4. The initial context is not included because that's not one of our balanced requests. So we have the lookup, the create, the business method, and the remove. So because there's 4, and consider if I had 2 cluster members, we can look at the pattern here. So member 1, we get the JNDI lookup. Member 2, we get the EJB create. Member 1, we get the EJB method. And member 2, we get the EJB remove. So if the client keeps following this pattern, you can see that member 1 is going to be getting more load or more things that are going to require more load, the EJB method calls and the lookup versus just the create and the remove. I had said before that the remove is a no-op operation and the create is a very fast operation. So you'd have one server getting a lot more load. This can manifest itself as, again, high CPU, could be a add memory issue, just because we're putting all the real work on one of the cluster members. So there's a couple solutions for this type of problem. Because really from an application standpoint or from a system administrator standpoint, you know, your application is coded to do whatever it does and you apply and run it. So if you detect one of these types of scenarios in a testing environment or something like that when you're doing your load testing, simple thing to do is you can add another cluster member. That will break, you know, this pattern that's occurring. If it's more in the development time when this is discovered, what can be done is a caching of an initial context and an EJB JNDI lookup and a create so that all that's really being done over and over in your application is the actual EJB method call. And as we showed earlier, when you're just doing the method call, then there's only one operation and it will definitely balance between your cluster members. Okay, slide 13. All right, so the next big umbrella of problems that we get here at support have to do with workload management runtime exceptions. The one of the bigger ones that we get is the Corbin No Implement No Cluster Data, which is a message that you'll typically see on the node agent itself. So what this indicates is that the node agent, a request arrived to the node agent for cluster data, for a particular cluster, and the node agent will look, and if it can't find any cluster data, it will continue to look for that, throwing these no cluster data exceptions back to the client. So why this typically occurs, in what we've been seeing a lot lately, is as people go and move core groups or split up core groups, if the core groups are not bridged together and the node agent has been separated from the EJB cluster, then it isn't able to pick up any of the cluster information, and so it can't route requests to that particular cluster. So it's really important that all the node agents in the cell remain in the same core groups with your EJB clusters. Servlet clusters and things like that can go in a separate core group, and even if you are using multiple core groups because you have a really large number of app servers, it's still a good idea to bridge them together if you can to let that workload management data flow across. If that doesn't resolve the problem, looking at an ORB and WLM trace on the client and the node agent will at least allow you to see at runtime whether or not there's some other problem affecting the node agent's ability to get that cluster data. The second type of Corbin No Implement problem that we get a lot of is the no available target message. And this occurs on, you'll see this on node agents, clients, just about everywhere. And simply what it means is we have cluster data, but we're not able to find a particular target to handle the request. And this can occur for legitimate reasons, but we did have a number of defects within version 6 that were related to being able to route requests and resulting in a no available target. So one of the first things that you should look at, easiest thing, is make sure that you're at a level that is not affected by one of these particular APARs. If you are above that level, again, the ORB and WLM trace is necessary so that we can see what type of workload management information the client has or the node agent has and where it's coming from. But again, we can do a more targeted trace knowing the client and the node agent instead of having to trace everything in the cell. All right, slide 14. The other type of Corbin No Implements we'll see is forward limit reached and retry limit reached, and this is typically seen on a node agent. And what this means is, as I said before, when a client requests a cluster data from the node agent, the node agent is going to try to find that data. It'll go to sleep if it can't find it and keep waking up and retrying over and over again. So prior to getting this exception on the node agent, you're going to probably get a Corbin No response on your EJB client, wherever it is, because the node agent is not replying back to the client, letting it know that it can't find the data. It's still trying to service this particular request. And this will typically go longer than the ORB request timeout, which defaults to 180 seconds. So in this case, again, we want to check for known errors having to do with the looking for cluster data. We want to look at the HA manager configuration again to make sure that we haven't separated the node agents from the EJB clusters, and then try to find out what underlying problem is actually causing the error. And trace is a good way to do that because a lot of these particular exceptions are not just written out standard out alone. All right, and finally, the infamous signal retry. This is a client-side exception. And for that example that I just gave, when the client sends a request to the node agent to get cluster data, if the node agent is working on that information and is unable to get back to it and we hit a Corbin No response, the client will actually first get a Corbin No response followed by the Corbin No transient signal retry. And what this means is that the client should retry the request. From a workload management standpoint, we don't know whether or not that request succeeded. We know we sent the request, but we never got a reply back. So it's up to the client to determine whether or not it's something that should be retried or what the client would like to do with that. From a debug standpoint, you first need to gather the trace on the client to find out where the request went. And we can use those ORBRAS outputs that we had from our routing slide to figure out where the request went to. And then once we find that out, that's the actual server that would then need to be traced. But again, we can minimize the tracing down by following these kind of two-phased approach to figure this out, and then understand why the request didn't get serviced on that particular server. All right, slide 15. So what are some other factors that can affect workload management routing? One of them we've talked about so far is the HA manager service. We require HA manager service to be enabled in workload management for workload management in 6 and 6.1. I did mention the static routing. That is an option, but that does not provide live updates. So as you start and stop servers, the HA manager bulletin board used by workload management will get live information to the clients and to other servers trying to make requests to these EJB clusters. So it really is the recommended way to go. If you're having workload HA manager problems, obviously that will affect workload management routing. Things that you can check in your systemout.log are the DCS messages that you'll see when a HA manager or DCS view is being created. And if you're having problems in this area, again, it can affect the workload management routing, so you really need to solve those issues first. We've had a previous WebSphere technical exchange about HA Manager, and we have a lot of troubleshooting information within our WebSphere support side about diagnosing those types of problems. Again, the core group configuration is important. We mentioned the EJB cluster and the node agents really being the key. They need to be in the same core group or at least bridged together somehow, so that the node agents across the cell, even if you're, if there's a node agent that is not on the node where one of the cluster members is, it could still get a request from a client to get cluster data about that cluster. So it's very important to have when designing your environment. Alternatively, the EJB client servers themselves, if you're actually in the same cell or running in the same cell, is also good to be in the same core group so that they can automatically receive workload management information from the bulletin board, which is much faster than only getting it through regular updates from ORB requests. Okay, slide 16. The other layer that affects workload management quite a bit are ORB problems. The base ORB, which is part of the SDK, is where all of the actual transport, actual connectivity goes on when making these workload management calls. So if you have a problem in this layer, you're going to have a problem routing request. And some of the known issues around the V6 and time frame had to do with the 142 SDK. There were a couple defects in earlier service releases that affect how workload management recovers. So in a normal situation, everything would be okay, but in a recovery situation, we might not go as far to try to recover the request as possible, which ended up in failures in the client. And so one of the easiest things you can try is actually doing an SDK update if you have the ability, if you're in a test environment or non-production environment. You can do a SDK update to rule out any one of these known base ORB problems. The reason we suggest this is because it's an actual separate update, the SDK cumulative fixes, from the WebSphere app server cumulative fixes. So it can also be backed off quite easily. But that rules out and solves a lot of problems of known issues that we have. The other thing that you'll want to do is if it's an ORB problem related to connectivity, a core bug comm failure, or SSL ORB SSL handshake exception. The ORB and WLM trace, again, it's a kind of a one-stop trace. It'll give you at least a picture into all what's going on at those layers there and help you to resolve those issues. All right, moving on to slide 17. I've included a couple of resources. The first is the WLM troubleshooting guide. It contains a number of the runtime exceptions and kind of next steps that we talked about earlier in the presentation, and then we have the WLM MustGather. Now, while the MustGather is more meant for support, if you are trying to diagnose a problem or start from your within your own organization and you want to look at what are the questions that the support team would ask, there's a list of good information there that will help you as in doing your own PD and troubleshooting, along with the ORB trace and WLM trace instructions as well. and those will be for version 6.1, 6, 5.1, and then clients. All right, so in summary, on slide 18, we discussed EJB workload management and how workload management works. We learned about the types of requests that are workload management, and you remember the four types. Those are very important. It's not just the EJB method calls. It's the JNDI lookup to create the remove. We walked through steps to diagnose routing problems using ORB tracepoints and then workload management tracepoints. We also reviewed an example of pattern routing and how that can affect the perception of what's going on or if there's a problem or even some actual real issues that can occur from that. And then we talked about other factors affecting WLM routing and runtime exceptions. All right, slide 19. So we have a list here of additional WebSphere product resources. There's some really great ones there, and like to point out IBM Education Assistant and then the ESR or Electronic Service Request tool for submitting problems electronically. There's really good tools here, really great resources, along with the other links that I've provided within the presentation as well. So this time I'll turn it over to Elijah for the question and answers.
Thank you, Paul, for a great presentation.
And our first question will come from William Morrison.
Yeah, question on slide number 5. We talked about round robin and the associated weights, and I'm trying to figure out exactly how the round robin works in the sense is if I have multiple distributed servers and they're all at weight of 2 and I switch them all to a weight of 10, underneath the covers, do the transactions happen exactly the same, or does it, you know, give 10 transactions to one server before it moves on to the next server? And then I have a follow-up question after this.
Okay, we'll start with that first one. Actually, that link that I have there, this shows an example just like that, where what is the distribution if I have the weight of 10. You want to use the lowest common denominator for your weights when setting them, which is generally the recommendation from our workload management development team. But even then, it won't put all the requests for whatever weight you sent to the server first. It will still rotate those among them. You can have, I think, 2 or maybe 3 in a row go to a particular server, but in general, it will rotate among them all. But again, I encourage you to take a look at that link because it has one with multiple, with weights that are bigger than 2, and it shows how they're distributed kind of graphically, how the algorithm works. This did change from 5.1 to 6.0 and 6.1. They did this to better get distribution for larger weights.
Okay, so, all right, I'll look at the link and see if that helps clear up the issue. Second question is, I've got a cell with multiple machines in a distributed environment, and in this particular configuration, we've got one server per machine, but we split the EJB transactions, put that into a separate cluster, and then from the web side of the transactions. And we're able to adequately adjust the weights on the web-based side so that we can basically distribute based on the machine's capabilities. Now, on the EJB side, on those separate machines, if we have machines with different speed capabilities or CPU capabilities, we're finding that adjusting the weights has very little impact on how the transactions are distributed. And we're finding that it's difficult to control the CPU across the board on those machines. We'll see the machines that have the weakest capability are going to be CPU bound. So is there something else that we need to be looking at that's above and beyond just setting weights in order to make sure that distribution is more equitable?
Right. There's a couple of things I think that might be affecting you here. First, are your weights separated? Are they just single weight increments, or are you actually doing something to more magnify that difference in the weight between the lower CPU systems and the higher CPU systems?
We're just simply trying to control it via the weight only, unless there's something else that we need to be looking at.
Are you using a bigger number than just like a differential of 1, or are you doing like two times as much like the weight? Are you saying like four for the...
It did not matter what we did. No matter what I changed as far as weights, we saw no differentiation change in CPU across any of the machines.
Okay, then what I would move on to is the looking to see if there is a pattern routing issue. And it's one of those, again, one of the common ones. If all the EJB requests, method requests that are doing more work are going to those lower CPU systems, and then the quick requests like it creates and removes are going to the systems with more the better hardware, then you will, you know, have issues like being CPU bound. So what I would do is I'd start by just taking one of those traces that I mentioned on one of the clients, just doesn't matter which one, just one of the clients, to look and see what type of methods are going to the lower machines, what types are going to the machines with more CPU, more memory, things like that, and then to see if there is an issue with the actual way the application is written and the number of cluster members you have that's leading you into this case. Again, one of the things, if it's determined, it sounds like you're coming more from the system administration side, but if it's determined at that level, things we can do to break those patterns are, again, changing the number of cluster members we have to better break those, however the application is coded, up so that we don't have that predictable routing. And then the other part of that is then looking at seeing if the application is doing the same number of requests in how they're written versus caching something up front and just using the method call itself to go over, which would be more, which would distribute more across your cluster members the way you want it.
So what you're telling me is that the potential exists where the application itself may be inadvertently routing based on machine capabilities?
Well, not inadvertently routing, but just the way that it's coded, the way that the app has been coded to do the EJB lookup does not mesh well with the number of cluster members you have and then the weights that you have set. And so, again, we have different ways that you can solve this if the app, you know, if this is found during development time and in the app design is something that could be changed, then you can look at it from that angle, or you can do other things from the system administration side to help break that routing up.
Well, that's what I'd be more looking at, is what we can do from a system administration side as far as the setup of the cell so that the distribution is more equitable.
Right, and what you can do is that something that from an IBM support standpoint we can assist you with. You know, once you have this information data, so we can see how the distribution goes, we can actually look and see if there's one of those cases there that's getting us into the pattern routing, and if so, help you come up with an action plan to change that.
Okay, thank you.
Once again, that is star one if you have a question. Our next question will come from Michael Thornton.
Hi, Paul. My question is, on the routing patterns, so are you suggesting that you should have an odd number of members in a cluster?
Well, one of the things is when I originally had that in my presentation with odd number, and then the workload management development team reminded me that you could still have an odd number of, or you could still have five workload manageable calls in your application. So if you had set to five instead of, or three and you have three. So it just has to be different than the number of clusters. And I know that seems counterintuitive, thinking, well, you know, we write our app how you write the app, right? It's following the J2E specification. But there are things that you can do in your app, like I said, had to do with caching an initial context, caching the EJB create and home during a maybe an initialization method, and so that all you're doing is really rotating the EJB method call itself. And that really gets us much better distribution across than other ways. But like I said, there's other ways from a system administration standpoint. Like you said, either maybe adding an odd number of cluster members if you have an even number of requests, and all the things can be determined with that client side trace.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Once again, it is star one if you would like to ask a question.
At this time, we'll conclude the presentation. We hope the information presented today has been valuable to you. We appreciate your participation. We hope you will join us for future presentations, which will be announced on the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange site. Remember, a replay of today's presentation will also be available on the site in the next day or two. Thanks very much for joining us today, and thank you, Paul, for presenting today.